one.
You know I'm gonna tap that ass, right?
Well, you were making it poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away.
Take it away.
Link it up.
Can you turn off the other
Dan,
music?
Dan, trying to do more than one thing at once. Yeah, having problems.
You know it. Screwing it up.
Spazzing
again.
Out.
Woo. Episode 91.
Moving right along.
Next week, Tech Show.
It's on the air.
And I'm lost. I don't know what I'm doing now. Oh.
Should we Skype Lincoln?
Well, we got two people that we're going to be Skyping in tonight.
Oh, we're doing a conference.
Yeah, we could do a conference. Ifitus, we'll be getting to you shortly. Let's bring Lincoln just for the opening, because Link's got a tummy ache. He's got the boo-boos. Oh, he's got the boo-boos.
We miss you, Link.
Not really. What the heck? Link was over on Friday night.
I tried to help you with your band.
Oh, yeah, we pissed the neighbors off.
You're out there till 1 o'clock in the morning?
Did you actually get it fixed?
It's just worse. that bolt is just... We were whacking off. Finally, like, guy yells out, "Oh, give us a break! It's 9:45." Because they have an outdoor.
I should have invited him over to yell at the asshole shooting fireworks off until 2 o'clock in the morning by me.
Yeah. So no, we weren't able to get that off. So it's gonna be a tow job, I think. Tow job to my.
Bust out the blowtorch, man.
Get a chisel.
Yeah, I got a blowtorch.
Let's bust it out.
Yeah. The next
get
thing
a
I
chisel.
Know, what a chisel?
Yeah.
Sit there and whack it. Well, I thought about
and
that.
And, like, break it. Just, like, nah. As long as you try to do it to just a nut, you know.
The blowtorch is better, man. It's quiet.
Oh, I know, but the chisel is much more satisfying. Especially after you fucked with it for, like, 3 days.
A week.
Yeah.
That's how long you've been screwing around.
A chisel
around,
and
right?
A big hammer.
Man?
What?
It's been a week since you've had that.
Yeah. And I have had 28. Yeah, I have had $28 in the bank. My checking account. I get paid tomorrow.
Oh,
that's when we get it fixed. Yeah, the wife lost her job, and now she has a new
sucks,
job
man.
That starts tomorrow.
Oh, she
well,
got
how about
right.
that, huh? Got it. So
good deal.
We'll have some, hopefully some money in the very near future, and I'll be able to do something more than just run and watch TV. And you know, I had all
I would
that
have actually
time.
Liked to like watch TV this weekend. I didn't
shit,
that.
That's loud.
Is that too loud
is
for you?
Is it really?
No, it was the ringing of the Skype phone.
Oh.
Well, there we go.
You sound fine, though.
It's his ass that's a problem.
What's going on, Link? How you doing?
I'm doing. How are you guys doing today?
How's the weather by you?
Give me a sec. I got to turn my volume down a little bit because you guys sound like
you're
eating microphones. That's better. Am I too loud over there?
No, not at all.
You sound
great.
Fine.
I so we can crank them down just a hair. Get rid of some clipping there.
Yeah, I had to cut you guys down a little bit, man. You sound like you were sitting inside my eardrums.
That's pretty damn loud, then.
Well, you get the feed before it goes to the compressor.
Ah, the raw feed you get.
You get it raw, man.
Because we're too cheap to offer that to our guests.
No, I just ran out of plugs.
They're giving it to me raw.
Nothing a trip to Radio Shack can't cure.
Yeah, at least that. I'm hesitant to do anything because everybody seems to say that it works now, so I'm sort of hesitant to, like, screw with it again.
Well, hey, you know what? Don't mess with success, right?
As long, exactly. as long as the MP3 sounds good, we're happy. And we know the AUX sounds good.
Actually, let me do that.
So you have a stomach virus.
Are you exploding?
I do, in fact, have something, yeah.
Are you exploding at both ends?
Not currently, but I expected that it was going to happen soon.
And also, now, when did this start? When did this come on for you?
This morning.
This morning. Did it feel like you had, like, a rock in the bottom of your stomach?
It still does, yeah.
Yeah, I had that, like, starting was a Saturday, and it went all the way through till about yesterday.
Night. Oh, that's great. That's great news to know. Thanks a lot, Dan. I appreciate
look what
that.
You have to look forward to.
I mean, it felt like a rock for like a day and a half, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh.
You could have told me it was going to go away in like an hour, you dick.
If you sleep, it seems like an hour. Sleep for the next couple of days. It's an ugly thing. And the worst is you start to get hungry. After a while, you don't want to eat anything, but then you get hungry. So then
you eat something and
you
puke it up.
Pain, and then you got the rock in the bottom of your stomach, and then you don't want to do anything.
Comes right back up. The worst is when you're sick, man, and you dine a thirst, and you drink a little bit of water, and then you puke. That's the worst.
Because you're not just supposed to drink water. You're supposed to drink Gatorade. To replace everything that you've puked out.
That's it.
So what do we have to talk about tonight?
But what if you like the little alligators and you don't want to see them ground up into a bottle?
Well, there you go.
Or your Gatorade's great after a night of drinking, too. Heavy drinking.
Heavy drinking.
Or after a couple one of these échauffés.
La chauffée. Is that Belgian?
The cotton.
The gnome.
Is that the beverage of the night over there?
The yes, gnome.
It is.
Not for me. I'm driving.
Well, Pat had a sip.
I've got Iceland Spring.
Pat had a sip.
So what do we have on tap for tonight?
Yes, what do we have on tap?
We got an interview, don't we?
We have an interview with James Rayner. He's going to be talking about Archie, live CD, I think.
This is our first interview with somebody in Australia, right? Live, yeah.
Oh, he's up really early then, huh?
No.
We're up really late.
I don't think so. I think it's like early morning. Like it's late morning.
It's like 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock
no,
in the morning.
No, it's not. I don't think so. I think it's morning, like 9, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
It's actually cool. A website where you can plug in where you are and where you want to talk to somebody, and you can see the time difference. I forget the website name.
Well, I know. What the hell are you then? You're supposed to have all of these facts right on the tip of your tongue there.
I think Alan is pulling it up right now.
That's what we hired you for.
Where is he, in Perth? Melbourne? Sydney? Do you know?
I have no clue how this one works. Should the stars be displayed?
No, we don't want stars. We want time zones. Let's do time zone converter. Time zone converter.
All right, I have him to my contact list, so we'll Skype in a few minutes.
Okay.
Because if he is up really late.
Is it? I don't think it is late. I think it's early in the morning. But not
well,
that
why don't
early.
We look? Some people's he's late. In Melbourne.
There we go. World clock.
And it is 11 a.m. in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's late morning.
Okay, all right.
Fine, man. He just had his bagel or whatever he has in the morning, his yogurt and his coffee.
Maybe he had a croissant.
10:40.
Or some shrimp on the barbie. All right, let's move on to some other things.
Moving right along.
What's going on this week?
Link's redesigning the tech show website.
Yay!
I got an email from Link last night.
Did you look at it?
Yes, it looks really nice. I got
There's nothing on there, man.
everyone click the submit button over and over again.
I got an email from him sometime yesterday, and I looked at it. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. He's like, MySQL's not working. The PHP to MySQL connection's not working on the the virtual server we have over there. So at 3:30 in the morning, I had to run a dist upgrade after updating.
Oh, shit.
Dude, I emailed you like it at... Freaking 2 o'clock in the afternoon, man. It's not my fault you don't check your mail for 4 days.
Yeah, but I was sleeping a lot yesterday, and then I got up and had to crash.
Dan's been missing in action the last couple of days.
Yeah, he's been sick. I had what Happy Boy has. But I looked at it, 3:30 in the morning, I'm running that upgrade, and that took about a half an hour before everything got up. What was a problem was every time I try and run the PHP MySQL to get that in, it would bomb and fail because it said the front page extensions weren't set up properly. And it's like, who the hell...
What are you doing front page?
No, we got front page extensions by default from this virtual server.
Bless you.
Because, Link, you and I, we went around about this about 2 months ago when we set up PHP on that box and having to finagle around. Cause we had,
right, yeah.
Yeah, PHP would not run. Apache with PHP would not run. We're getting some funky error. I forget what it exactly was. which we had to resolve by first doing a...
I don't know if you had to run a dist upgrade then, too, right?
Right, running a dist upgrade. So now, what had happened was, a couple months have gone by, all the repositories have been updated and changed, obviously. So when I went to get the PHP to MySQL package, it didn't exist in the right location anymore. So I had to update. Once I updated, I got a newer version. And with the newer version, required me to run a dist upgrade to get the newer version of everything because it wouldn't install. And then I was with the front page extensions crap. So I just removed the front page extensions crap. And
got it.
Yeah. apt-get install. And we were good to go. And that's, you know, yeah. And that's one of the things, you know, with a package management like apt-get or any package management systems, you are absolutely stuck within the confines of that package management system.
Yeah.
Unless you try to venture out on your own.
Or point it to a different repository.
Well, you can point it to a different, but you're still stuck within
the confines of that.
But if you go off and you compile your own software, then you have a disparity here. You got your own stuff going on. You got, like, a Debian.
They don't always match up.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
it's really
to run into problems.
Any of those
major distributions. Yeah, but don't blanket call it package management software, because there's one piece of package management software that doesn't do that.
Right.
And that's Slack packages.
Right, and you know...
Major clipping there. Slack packages.
That wasn't clipping, that was interference on the line.
With Slackware, sure. When you run Apache, you get Apache, you can get the PHP hook, you can get the MySQL, you know, PHP is compiled with it, MySQL hooks into it, so it all works fine. Whereas when you do it on the Debian side, I mean, you got just straight Apache with nothing. Then you can add, like, PHP,
Perl.
And you can add Perl. And you can add, like, WebDAV and all sorts of other crap. You can add anything in the world. And there's, like, four different PHP packages you can add. And you can have PHP this way.
You can add everything.
Yeah, you can have PHP that way and then mod front page. I mean, the reverse to that, you know, you can say, well, it makes it easier to have a lot of different configurations for Apache and PHP or any kind of configuration. Slackware, to an extent, you are limited to what they offer you unless you can recompile it and add the modules in yourself. Like getting a mod Perl installed can be a little tricky. All right, now with Debian, just apt-get.
I never had
Perl.
A problem with it, man.
With what?
With
mod
Debian.
Perl?
Debian.
No, I'm talking about on Slackware.
Oh.
Slackware does not give you a mod Perl by default. Or I don't even not even sure if it has it available. Do you know if it has mod Perl available through Linux packages?
I think you can get it.
I know.
You can get it, yeah.
Back in the day when I was compiling Apache with mod Perl, it's just a pain. Such a pain in the ass. But you know,
what the hell would you need mod Perl anyway?
Who knows, huh?
Stay away from that Perl stuff. Do PHP is better.
Anyway.
Don't tell Ricardo that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
You'll never hear the end of it.
I'll never live it down.
The PHP, I mean, getting the PHP was a couple months ago was a pain in the ass. Getting it this time, we just had to get rid of front page crap, which our, you know, the company we got the virtual server through automatically had that. I guess that must be a popular request for all those people who want to run their front page generated web pages.
We hear you, Link.
You're using front page over there, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
The front page.
I love front page.
Now, front page helps you generate your ASP web pages, or, you know, pages a lot better, doesn't it?
That's for server pages. Link, are you doing .NET programming?
You still there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what the tech show is all about, right?
.NET?
Now, you're in the process of converting that.
Hello.
You're in the process of converting that Fox Pro website at work and database over to MS SQL and ASP, right? And .NET?
Avery, yeah, sure.
He's going to hang up on us soon.
I think it's time for
another
question.
Skype.
Am I dropping out of them?
The joys of Skype.
Drop out a little bit, but everyone...
That's why, people, I brought my Asterisk server and it's sitting right next to me. And we will get it installed very soon.
Yeah. I was on an AI.
Well, plug that sucker in, man. I use the X10 client.
We got to change all the IP configuration files, though.
Jeez.
It worked pretty well.
You can compile just like Dana.
We did a test. We had it set up at my house over my cable modem. And we all went into the conference room, and the Asterisk server sounded decent, man. It wasn't bad at all.
Although it does suffer if you run really hot into it on it, it will clip you right out.
Remember, we're going over a cable modem.
Oh no, I know, but it was, you know, if you are too loud into it, it just clips out.
But I don't know if you remember, but we had full duplex. We could actually talk over each other, and it sounded okay.
Yeah.
We'll get it set up real soon. It's here. It's just a matter of, you know, getting it all running.
Well, you get half an hour before each show.
No.
That's how we got the sound going.
I sent an email to Dan to come over on Monday, but he wasn't feeling well, so.
Well, anyway, we were talking about the Debian issue getting it running. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't that hard to get running.
Nah, Debian's all right.
It just took some time. Just to download the newest package. It should be more proactive and keeping up to date on that. And it's one of those things where doing it at 3:30 in the morning, not the optimal time to run such a dist upgrade.
I can't do that.
And just sit there, wait for it to finish, and hope that, you know, it's all up and running for the next day. And obviously it was, and it's working fine. So,
yeah,
it's got its pros and cons. Now, in one of the more recent issues of Linux Journal, there was a person wrote in about package management, particularly the Debian apt-get package management system, when talking about the differences between getting, you know, the regular packages that a client would use as opposed to the developmental packages. And I kind of agree with him a little bit that knowing exactly what packages you need to get on Debian, if you're not using, like, Synaptic, you're just using apt-get, can be a little bit confusing at times, particularly if you want the developmental packages. For instance, he had brought up trying to download MySQL. Well, if you want MySQL client, that means, you know, you could just get MySQL common. I'm not sure if it pulls down the client also, but if you get MySQL client, you get MySQL common, but you don't get the server, and then you don't get the developmental stuff. One of the problems that I've had, it's been kind of a pain in the butt, and it's not, again, it's a nuisance, it's not difficult to overcome, is I got the latest version of Scribus came out. And there wasn't a package made for Debian yet, so I wanted to try it out.
So what'd you do?
I pulled down the sources, of course, and I was going to compile it myself. Well, then what ends up happening is you start to compile it, you're on the configure, then you got to find the developmental packages that you're missing on the Debian side. And for some reason, Qt, it said that it couldn't find, Qt-mt. So then I could have sworn I had that installed. Proper headers. So I installed the libqt, what was it, 3 developmental files. Still was causing a problem.
Mock, did you install mock? That's one sometimes you have to do with...
mock, isn't that a kernel?
No. There's a package, Qt kernel. No, it's a Qt package.
Well, what I ended up doing was, when I installed the one developmental package, it removed the qt-mt package. So I reinstalled the qt-mt package, and for some reason that solved everything, and I was able to compile Scribus. So, you know, you got to really sometimes know what you're looking for when you're installing developmental packages.
So how is Scribus?
I like it a lot.
I saw some of the things you created.
Messing around. We're going to get to that in a little bit.
We're going to get to it.
We're definitely going to get to it. Now, he had said that on the RPM side, using, I think it was Yum, on the Fedora side, that when you get the developmental package, you get, like, if you want the package, you get everything you need to run that package. Whereas if you get the developmental version of it, you get everything you need to develop based upon that package. So it can get a little confusing at times, I admit. But you just got to persevere and push through it.
Keep plugging away.
Now with Slackware, I mean, when you get a package, you get everything. You don't get a choice between developmental and just non-developmental. You get everything.
Yeah, the problem is if they don't document all the dependencies. And
that's right. It should be.
The pros and cons of that is if you don't need a developmental system, stuff with developmental packages on it, it takes up more space. But what are you going to do? What are you going to... Now, you know, somebody said, what about AppCache? Yeah, I use AppCache.
AppCache search?
Search all the time.
Me too, man. It's great.
Well, when you do, like, you do AppCache search for QT or QT developmental, you get just a shitload of packages. So you got, again, you got to be kind of a little cognizant of what you're looking for. It's not, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things. And you don't always just get, like, QT stuff. I mean, you get something that requires QT or is built upon QT or adds
thrown into
QT.
The mix for whatever reason.
So you just, like, look for a simple thing. Like, let me pull up an example here. Since
Fortunately, we don't have a digital whiteboard for you to see, people.
We were looking at that. Whiteboard
yes,
software.
You'll get to see when we start doing the show on TV. The Tech Show TV.
All right, so if I did an apt-get search on just QT, for instance, I get a whole bunch of stuff like ZINF, eBook Dev KDE 2.0, SIP4, SIP. So you really got to, you know, Scribus is even listed in there. And that's stuff that requires QT, not just basic QT package. So, I mean, you just, maybe I'm missing something. Like I said, my experience with Debian coming from Slackware was just a cursory, just enough to get me going, and maybe that's my mistake. But, again, I really love Debian. I use it more than I would use an RPM-based system.
I'm running a server in my house, man. My blog.
Whereas Link, on the other hand, he likes that ME. What is that? Windows ME?
He's using
yeah, baby.
Windows Home Media Edition.
Right.
Because it's always just about me.
Yeah. Everybody wants to hear about Tech Show TV. Well, you know what? We haven't gone anywhere with TLLTS TV.
Dan's been sick.
It may take several months, like the magazine took several years.
Yeah.
6 years?
Compared to the magazine.
And we've gotten the first page.
You got a little further with that. You know, 6 years in the making. But we're going to get to that later.
So you've got at least 6 months for TV.
Hey, the radio show came together a lot faster. All right? So the magazine, give it a break.
That's only because I pretty much had to stand on Dan to get stuff done.
I think for TV, though, we're going to have to come up with a different room.
Yeah.
There's just no way of getting everyone on camera at once unless you like use one of those like security cameras sitting up in the ceiling type things.
Well, if I ever finish my basement, we could do the studio in my basement.
Well, you know, let's just talk about the TLLTS TV for a minute. And you know, obviously, your vision of that would probably be different than Pat's, than Link's, than mine. What I originally thought of when doing this was a lot of kind of like when you saw in the shadows, be more on the lines of be able to do stuff that you can't really do on the radio show, being able to show demonstrations, being
like
able
the
to
war driving
screenshots, you know, the war and ship war driving, be able to output like to a video file. Stuff like that, and you know, whatever else that we felt like throwing in there. I never intended it for to be like a stream, tech show stream.
No, you can't do it live.
We're not going to do something like that live. As for a stream, probably not. It would be something that would be made available for download.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. So those people who are like, well, what about dial-up, you know, being able to stream across dial-up? No, it's not something
like that.
A lot of people want to see new speedos, though, dude.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, we're not going to be, you know, it's not going to be an add-on to the radio show. It's not going to be doing the radio show, and there's the TV, you know, filming
that's
us.
That's boring,
the radio
man.
Show.
That's weak.
That's not.
That's what those dicks on AIM radio do.
I mean, who in the hell would want to see something like that?
Imus and freaking.
I was say we could be Imus again.
Mike and the Mad Dog and those assholes.
Yeah, I mean that would be
bunch of tools.
Maybe we could cut together a bunch of screens of the screw-ups because we sit here and scramble around. I mean, what do you think, Link? Did you have any idea?
I don't know. I'm just, you know, I want to just feel it out and see what happens as we get there. I think it's probably a long way off anyway, so.
Right. My testing with the equipment that I have now, I don't know. Have you tried recording off the S-Video from your laptop yet?
Nope.
I have tried the scan converter, which works.
Get rid of the lines?
Well, yeah, well, it pipes it out. You don't have to worry about the lines. If you point the digital camera at an LCD display, you're not going to get the lines either.
That's cool.
But I figured that way I'd get the full screen, nothing else around it. The only problem is, and you really, in order to get anything legible on the screen, it has to be, you know, set to like 800 by 600. You got to mess around with the display of like an X terminal to, you know, black on white seems to work pretty good. And even then, it was just so dark that I had to use Cinelera to increase the brightness of it so you could actually read what was on the screen. And then you saw.
What resolution?
I have TV out on
800 by 600.
You can't go more than that.
I know, and still it's really tough.
You might want to bring it down.
I have TV out on this laptop.
Everybody seems to have. Like, you have S-Video or TV out?
It's just just a regular little video out.
TV out.
Oh, wow, how about that?
RCA, it's an RCA out.
Which is a step down from the S-Video.
On internet, you're not going to notice it.
No, no. It's good quality.
By the time it gets compressed and everything else.
That's got FireWire and it's got an S-Video, too.
But this?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is FireWire and S-Video.
Yeah, I have the same camera.
But I don't know. How are you going to have to get some way to convert it from that right there to S-Video if you pull it in through there? Or what would you pull it in off of?
They sell the RCA to S-Video adapters. I've seen them in Radio Shack. So
yeah, I have one. That, a little plug.
Yeah, it's just a little plug.
Right, so you could
plug it right into the camera and do your recording off of that.
And that's the only thing I don't think we have tried yet is going straight from, like, it seems like everybody's laptop has some kind of video out,
mm-hmm.
S-Video or, like, you have it right there, which I'm curious to see how well that would work compared to using the scan converter.
Well, I know I've done this one to watch DVDs off of and plugged into the TV. It comes out pretty good.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So I would imagine it would still, you know, if you plugged it right into a camera, it would do just as well.
Got to try it,
but
man.
I don't know.
Give it a shot.
But it's something to look at. Like I said, when I played around with it, it's good. My only concern is I was able to... spending some time working with Cinelera, I was able to get the video in.
So what do you have to do with Cinelera? You have to brighten it up?
Well, I used the brightness plug-in. Took me a while to figure that out. You know, there's a nice little plug-in. You just drag it up to that section you want the plug-in to be applied to. But then I was sitting there trying to figure out, well, how can I actually increase the brightness? You go down to on the timeline where the plug-in is. You right-click on it. You select properties. And it has a little properties of the brightness. So you can increase the brightness, you can lower the contrast.
Not very intuitive, is it?
Not at first, but now that I understand where the properties are, like I couldn't figure out where that was. Cause you have four different windows. You have a preview window, a live window, which allows you to do different editing. You have a timeline window, and then you have like a files window where you can pull in your plugins, mm-hmm. your media files, and stuff like that. So then I took a WAV file that I made in Audacity, and I pulled that in as an audio track. And it gets to be kind of a pain in the ass because you got to make sure that the audio track is in sync with the video. Or, you know, if you want it to apply to a certain section, that your audio falls within that time frame. And I got everything working. But when I went to export it, I got an error right at the end. And it had to do with whatever happened with adding that audio track. So I don't know. It worked. I'm just curious to find out if we had more files or, like, more video or whatever beyond that error point, would it have dumped out or would it just kept going?
You're running this on your fastest machine, I assume, right?
Yep. That one right there.
Did you wind up encoding a file or you didn't get that far?
No, I got a file.
What did you do?
I did it to MPEG, AVI. And I tried MPEG-4, and then I converted it to Theora using the FFmpeg with Theora tools. I didn't have a problem converting it to Theora. It was depending on... Well, actually, I don't know if you can rephrase that. I think I had to get it in a AVI format exported from Cinelera. I forget exactly which format I had to export.
Cinelera is AVI, no?
Well, it can do like QuickTime, AVI, MPEG-4, AVI, just MPEG-3, MPEG-2. So it's a lot of funky playing around with it to find the right.
Does Cinelera have a plugin to do the encoding directly in the application, or you have to use different?
It'll render it for you.
Yeah, it'll do it for you.
Whatever format you want. Now, I would be fine with just regular digital.
Because Kino now does encoding now too.
Right, it does.
Which is nice.
I exported the video I pulled in off of Kino through to AVI, imported it in through Cinelera, did my editing that way, and then exported that out again to AVI and ran FFmpeg to Theora. In a nutshell, that's what it was. And everybody was happy. Even Alan. Now, I played it last week.
Yes, I finally compiled it so I can actually see what you put up there.
Right. What's really tough is you got. I found with FFmpeg to Theora, you need to stay within certain parameters, like 320 by 240, 720 by, or 520 by.
It's multiples of 320 by 240, I think.
Right.
Because 320 by 240 is just regular video for TV video.
Right.
TSA.
But when you get it down to that size, like 320 by 240 or 640
never
by
the same color.
Yeah, it looks like shit on your computer, but you pipe it through the TV and it looks decent.
It looks fine, yeah. But it's really hard. You get such a small screen, it's hard to see anything that you type in an external.
Right.
So it makes it difficult to do that if you're not using, you know, some way to boost the size of that X term right there. And the larger you make it, the less you can fit on the screen.
Right.
So, I mean, we got a whole bunch of technical obstacles.
Basically, what it boils down to is you got to experiment and fiddle with it a little bit.
Right. There's a lot more playing around to be done. To actually show anything and be able to do it.
Now, yeah, what they said.
Now, on the flip side to this, I guess we could talk about this before we get to Archie Linux. Hopefully, we're not going to waste too much time. The Linux Link, or TLLTS magazine, which was an idea that we're pushing around also. Link and I were playing around with Scribus this past week. Link, what was your impression of Scribus?
You know what? After not using stuff like that for a long, long time, I actually had a lot of fun. I don't think it's very difficult at all to use. I think there's some features that it probably is lacking right now, but the software really still is at its infancy, and I expect to see a lot more stuff come along. But I thought it was really neat.
Like, what do you think it's lacking?
Specifically, one of the things I can remember is we were talking about it's difficult to get a link in a PDF file when you export the PDF file. And I would, I would expect features like that to pop up as people really realize that they're lacking. So,
yeah, my opinion of that, adding a link to a PDF file, making a link active, it was not as intuitive as I thought it should be. The way that you basically go about doing this is you need to take like a text box, you look at the properties of it. There's PDF properties, which you can add a PDF annotation. So you add a PDF annotation to that text box. Then once you go back into that and go through the same process of right-clicking on it, get the properties, go to PDF, you could get to the properties of the PDF annotation. It doesn't automatically bring up a window when you apply a PDF annotation to that text box. From there, you can choose different links that you want to make that text boxed into. The first problem I had was I took a text box and I typed in a link into it, and I figured, here, we'll type in the linuxlink.net, and I'm going to make that a active link in Scribus.
Didn't like it?
Well, I did that. What happened was, when it was all said and done, the text in the text box disappeared, but the link was active. So no matter what was in that text box, for some reason it wouldn't show. But if I, when I exported it to a PDF file, if I hovered over it, it was a link. I clicked on it, it would open up my default web browser. Now, what I found that it seems that you can't apply the PDF annotation to it at like a text box with any text in it, because it won't show the text. I don't know.
So is it a bug or is it a feature that's not implemented?
I don't know. I haven't explored it that far. I'm, you know, I want to get on their mailing list and ask some of these questions around. But what you can do then is you can take a text box, put your text in there. For instance, like the way that you actually operate this type of application, a document layout application, which is with Scribus, is I guess they're striving to be like the GIMP is the Photoshop. Scribus would be kind of the Quark. It's what they're trying to go after, is that kind of market high end. What you do is you get your page, all right? You lay out your page. You apply, in a sense, boxes on your page, text boxes, image boxes, you know, different types of boxes. And then once you lay out those boxes, you can import text from, like, a text file, or I think it might even do an Open Office format, or even Word, I think, if you have the proper conversion filters. And it would pull that text right in, and the text would flow into that box. On an image box, you'd say get the picture. You put the text right into the picture. Now, you can go in and, like a traditional word processor, edit the text of a text box and type in the text that you want to put in there. But what you're supposed to do is have a separate text file that you import into it.
Right. Yeah.
So if you have, like, a text box and you import your text into there and you have, like, a link in there, what you would do then is once you have the text box in there with your text, create another text box over top of that link, just that section. So you have like another text box layered over top of it. You apply the PDF annotation to there, make it an active link to a web page. You won't see anything, but when you hover over top of that,
so it's basically a workaround.
Text, right. That seems to be the best way to do it. Like I said, I have not read too much of the official documentation of Scribus.
Because we never read documentation.
No, hell no.
Read the fucking manual.
You don't read the manual until you absolutely have to. You just keep plugging away at it until you just throw your hands up in the air. And you're like, woo.
And then when you get on the mailing list and start asking stupid questions,
right.
You start getting insulted.
Yeah. Read the manual, you dumbass. Now, what I will say is my first experience with Scribus, putting together just seeing what I could do with it, it was a lot of fun. What's really cool is it has hooks in the application, so if you want to pull in a picture and then edit the picture, you right-click, edit the picture, it pulls up the GIMP. You take your changes to the picture, you close the GIMP out, and you're back into Scribus.
That's
and the
cool.
Changes are right there. It's really cool. You can do a whole bunch of cool stuff. So I started pulling images in. I was using just stuff that was off of our website, different images that we put together. What I noticed was XPDF and Gnome's PDF and GS, I think View it was, currently do not have support for transparencies. Later, so I had like that picture. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah.
You obviously saw the one off my blog. Had originally had a picture of you in there, but because of this drop shadow effect, it was a PNG. I never took out the transparency of it. The original like picture of.
I noticed when I printed it out at work, it came up a little bit light. The pictures came up a little bit light.
I don't have it optimized for print. It's only for screen. What I did was, if you go to the Tech Show webpage, you have that little banner at the top and the little penguin. Well, the banner at the top is a background for that, I think, section of the table. The penguin is an image, so I pulled both of those off there. And in Scribus, I just floated put the image right on top of the banner.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but the penguin was a GIF that had transparency on it. What had happened though, when you export it, you get a black block around just a section of the image that's transparent. Now, you don't see this in Adobe Acrobat for Linux, but you do see it on XPDF and GNOME PDF and GS View. And I believe it has to do with PDF version 1.5. Now, apparently, XPDF version 3.00 plus has this capability of showing it. I don't have it. I have version 3.00 on Debian. I tried getting the latest version of XPDF with the patches and everything and compile it. I had to run around with missing dependencies and stuff like that. And I finally gave up and said, you know, to hell with it. So transparencies are a pain in the ass. Now, you can get around this very simply by taking anything that has a transparency. For instance, the banner with the penguin on top of it, just open that up, put the penguin on that banner that you want, save it as one file, and pull it up. Voila, that problem's fixed. With your issue with the drop shadow, the transparency around the picture right there.
Well, it wasn't an issue. I just wanted to let you know.
All I did was pull that up in the GIMP and put a white background because it was going on top of a white page. Put a white background, save it like that. Then I don't have the block going around. It's white, which is just the same thing. fixes that problem.
To hell with you.
Yes, to hell with you.
Crab.
So, Scribus, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Now, originally, I had the idea, 6 years ago, to do a Linux magazine. It was kind of a...
Was that before the lug?
Jesus, it was a long time.
Yeah, it was before the lug. It was...
I still remember the original web page that said that.
Yeah. It was,
I remember
check
that too.
Right now, check here for lug information.
In the future.
The original web page was up there for like 4 years, man.
I was going to say, yeah.
The page was up there before... it was up there up until we started... right before we started the web show, the web radio show, I think. It was there for the longest time. And I had people that were interested. My idea was to put like a newsletter together, and it would be something that you could take to the can. You know, it wasn't going to be an online thing. And it never got off the ground. I don't know why. But now we're at the point where, you know, we're playing around with Scribus. We're thinking about that. And what I think, the tough thing for me is you look at TLLTS TV, you look at TLLTS Magazine. What I would like to see from a magazine would be not just... you know, PDF file, but to have other content in there. For instance, if you're showing how to do something, like how to apply a GIMP filter, it would be nice to
video.
Have a video.
That would be awesome.
Or a VNC to SWF, had a little web page with a flash file that you could link to, and you would see actual capture of applying this filter or whatever you want to do. Because I've gone through GIMP tutorials, and sometimes you're sitting there, you're reading it, through the steps, you're looking at the images to follow along, and you're like, man, something's just not clicking here because I'm missing a certain step, or something's not explained right. Or if you're looking at a different version of the GIMP as compared to an older version, they say, you know, apply this, but that's not worded the same way. It gets a little confusing. So I'm thinking, well, maybe some of that confusion will be taken out by showing a screen capture of what you're actually doing.
Picture's worth 1,000 words.
Right. A video's worth 1,000,000 words. You know, something like that. So you'd be able to have not just the article and maybe a picture to go with it, but a flash file or a video file, you know, or any kind of audio content or anything that you could be able to link into. So that's kind of my idea.
The cup is not going to keep filling itself.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it like, I got my drink right here. I should be drinking right out of this on the floor. I have to keep it on the floor because the condensation puts a pool of water on the tape. So I like to freeze it up. Any input there, Link?
Third input.
I agree totally. The only thing that I was thinking was instead of, like we talked about this before, instead of actually adding it to the magazine to put links in there so they can download it if they want, or they can, you know, take the little magazine PDF with them on a disc or CD or something wherever they happen to be going.
Well, yeah, I don't know how you would actually put any of that type of file into the PDF. I think it would have to be linked to. And, you know, it would be something that it would supplement what's there. And
videos are awesome, man. You know, anytime you got a magazine or something. One of the coolest things is, like, Linux format. You go to the magazine rack and they have a CD full of stuff, of videos, applications. That extra content, I think, adds to the whole experience, I think.
So we'll see what happens.
All you need is time to do it.
Right.
Stay tuned for the next 6 years to see if we actually get one.
Well, you know, it's not just time to do it. We need to have articles and everything, too.
Yeah, so. We need contributors.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. See, now we have the perfect opportunity to ask some of the people that are listening to the show that if they would like to contribute an article or something like that, that, you know, hey, get your name in print, man. We could it could be like one of the things in the premier issue of the Linux Link Tech Show magazine or something like that.
And artwork.
Yeah, and artwork.
We need an artist. Any artists out there, please let us know.
So. And fan pictures.
We got fan pictures. Don't you remember?
More fan pictures.
Yes, so we can put them on the wall for world domination.
Yeah. All right. Link, I want to Skype in James here, but I think I'm going to have to knock you off and set up a conference call. Unless I can.
He's going to knock me off.
Can I set up a conference call with him?
Rub
me
out. No, I think you got to disconnect me and pull me back in.
If our Asterisk server was running, you could do that.
Yeah, but I'm a lazy ass, and I
yeah, Pat.
No, it's not.
Don't
Pat's
look at
fault.
Me, man.
That's my fault this time.
I was emailing him trying to get together over the weekend.
What time did you get there today, Pat?
I shut up the last minute. That's because I was looking at a computer.
See, there you go. He could have done it tonight.
If you've been
wait! Hold on.
If you've been here at 7:30.
Hold on.
That's
wait,
right.
We might not have to disconnect.
No, it will allow you to put it in there, but it won't work.
It won't pull them in.
It's ringing.
You gotta drop a link. Dan doesn't believe us.
I hold out. Maybe they changed something.
They didn't change
Maybe
shit.
Maybe they mystically changed something on the new version of Skype, which I never downloaded.
Speaking of Skype, the people over at Linspire are coming out with a new application called Gizmo. Did you see this? It's a SIP protocol.
Yes.
Kind of like Skype.
But the Linux version is not going to be released until August. Unfortunately.
Link, I think we have to drop you.
No, wait.
No?
He said hold on a second. We're going to try again. He's ringing. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Trying again.
I'm sure he's going to have to draw, man.
He doesn't believe us.
All right.
We're going to hang up, Link.
Hold on, Link.
Music on hold.
Speaking of Skype, man, I was trying different ways to record Skype phone calls. And the old way of doing it was to have a second machine with, like, a listener ID and using vSound to pipe it in on the second machine. Now, somebody wrote a couple different programs to do it on one machine. And I just couldn't get the damn thing to work. It was driving me insane. So if anybody knows an easy way to record Skype phone calls on one machine, let me know. I even went so far as to try this Windows application, run it through Wine.
Link, you're back, right?
I am, yep. Right. I'm front, too.
Yeah, in the backside. I think James is having a little difficulty.
It's my first text show in my underwear, actually, so, you know.
James, I don't know if you're familiar with Skype, but...
It's Alan's first text show
in my
underwear,
too. If you're running KDE, kill the KDE server. If you're running KDE, that's always a pain in the ass, man. Sometimes the ART server interferes with Skype. Our ART server seems to interfere with a lot of things.
Yeah, the workaround for that is to set it so it only stays on for like 2 seconds.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, you can manually kill it. That's
well,
what I wanted.
The easiest way is just go into the control panel and set it up for like 2 seconds.
I've had Myth TV have problems because it's a stupid ART server. Like, I'll fire up Myth TV like right after a boot up, and I won't have any audio because of the stupid ART server.
Yeah, we'll try this again. Now, if I initiated a conference call.
There we go.
You there, James?
Hello?
There
hey.
He is!
Hey.
Woo! Hey. And Link's there, too?
I'm here.
All right, we're in business.
Hey, good work. I got it.
So, James, where are you in Australia?
I'm just down in Melbourne, down the bottom. So
what time is it by you, 11 a.m.?
It's 11:30 now. So.
Okay. So that's good. We didn't wake your ass up out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Someday we'll learn how to tell time.
Now, am I clear? Or?
You're fine.
Cool. Back up.
Now, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly. Fine.
Great. So you wanted to come on today and talk about Archie Live CD?
Yep. Archie is the new live CD out there. It's based on Arch Linux. It's entirely new. It's not based on any other live CD's work. And the Archie Live CD developer claims to be the fastest live CD out there. It's lightweight and it's designed with performance in mind. It comes up with a full XFCE for desktop and works awesomely. I've been the developer of the hard drive installer and doing some work on the kernels for it.
How big is the development team?
At the moment, it's just the main developer, and I've just been doing lots of bits, odds, and ends. It's just it's a small community thing. It's not big or not big or anything. It's a small community thing.
Now, it's just built around RPM distribution, right?
Arc is a distribution that's similar to Slackware in some ways. It uses TarJZ.
Okay.
So it's on package manager for Pac-Man. And, yeah. It
now, on Slackware, when you have a Slackware package, it is essentially, you know, the when you install, it goes into a specific destination directory, tars up that package, runs some scripts to get any further configurations that need to get done when you install it, and then you're good to go. Is that basically the same thing that an Arch package is?
Well, Arch's got its own package manager called Pac-Man, which does dependencies and all the things that apt-get and ERPMe and Yum and all the other package managers do. So that grabs the downloads from the internet or wherever, just like any like ERPMe or apt-get, and gets any dependencies, installs them, and if the package has a install script, it'll run that too if it needs to. So
is it pretty easy to create the Archie packages?
Yeah, Arch packages are really, really easy to create using a program called Make Package, and it's really, really good. You pretty much just need instructions to make install it in a script file, and you run that, and it makes it into an Arch package.
So what's your primary goal of the live CD? Is it just to have a fast bootable, you know, or is it something specific like WAPIX is, you know, a hacking CD?
The main goal of it is just to create a functional but fast CD at the same time. So it comes up with all the programs you'll want, like Firefox and Thunderbird and GIMP, Inkscape,
Cause
everything in live CD.
Because right now, Damn Small is my favorite bootable.
Yeah.
I'll have to check out Archie.
Yeah, well, if you want me to give you the link to the download of the latest version, let's check that on the IRC.
Okay.
Now, how long were you guys working on the live version of Archie?
I've been working the live version of Archie just in the past month or two. The main developers have been working on it for probably the last year and a bit. Well, not a year, not about a year, probably about half a year. And it's all been coming up, and it's really starting to come together right now. We've made our first releases and things, and it's looking really good.
Are you focusing on the XFCE desktop? Now, do you include other window managers on there, or is it just straight XFCE?
Our first Arch uses straight XFCE, but we plan to develop plans to make a lightweight one that will fit on a USB flash drive, which will probably have something like Fluxbox on it. He also plans to make a KDE-based one, which will be a bit bigger. And
now, if you go down a KDE-based route, doesn't that end up takes away some of the speed that you originally had with the XFCE-based one, correct?
Well, yeah, it's KDE. It'll be a bigger CD. It'll be a bit slower, but, you know, I mean, yeah, the XFCE one's the main one. That's what our focus has been on.
Now, Nopix has been well-renowned for just its phenomenal hardware detection capabilities. How does the Archie Live compare to the Nopix with regards to hardware detection and configuration?
Archie uses a program called LSHWD. It does a really awesome job at detecting hardware. It's detected all the hardware on my laptop. All the people I've talked with have, you know, loved it. It does a great job, and it's really fast too, which is good.
Now, are you
So the whole project's been grown in-house, so we've got the hardware detection, the whole scripts to make the ISO. A lot of it's been done in-house.
Okay.
Have you built upon what other people have done with other live distros?
We've looked at what others have done, like Read-Ahead, which is a thing they use in recent Nopixes to make it a bit faster. We've just implemented that on ours and been claimed to have about a 10 to 30% speed increase on boot up, make it boot a bit faster. So we've just got that working on Archie, and that should be out for 5.4.4. it makes big release.
Do you have any idea how much of a distribution you've had so far with the live CD?
Pardon?
Do you know how many downloads you've had? Like, you're just starting out, I assume, right?
Starting out, we haven't had a lot of major press yet on any other major Linux websites yet. But it is gaining popularity. We're getting quite a bit of interest around the art community, and some of my friends have been pretty impressed with it too, who aren't Linux users, so they like it and works good on their computers. So it's gaining interest. It's still a young project, but it's going to go somewhere. It's going to be big.
Live CDs are fantastic for just showing newbies and people who are not familiar with Linux what it is exactly and what the environment's like.
Pardon?
It's a great way of introducing people to Linux, live CDs.
It's a great way. I mean, Archie comes with everything you could want in a Linux desktop. I mean, it comes with AVWord, Firefox. It comes with all the programs you could want, XCAT, game. It's a great Linux desktop. Last night, I just ran the first successful hard drive install with the new hard drive installer GUI, which I've been working on. And so I'm running on my new system now, which I just installed with that. Some screenshots of that onto the IRC if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. Now, the installer for Archie, is that you get the live CD and then run an installer via the live CD, or is there actually a separate installation CD?
Well, there's the official ARC install CD, but there's also, but as part of the Archie CD, we've created we've been working on a hard drive install, which just installs Archie straight from the CD onto your hard drive, and pretty much gives you whatever's on the CD is what you get on your hard drive, and depending on your speed of your CD drive, I managed to copy all the software on the CD to my hard drive and less than 10 minutes last night, so you could get a desktop install in less than half an hour quite easily.
Now, the website for Arch Linux touts that it is very slim, very fast. One of the things that you say is you use ABI Word as opposed to bloated Open Office. Somebody pulls down Arch Linux and they say, well, I want to use the bloated OpenOffice, or I want KDE as opposed to XFCE. Are there packages for Arch Linux for that, or is it? Are you just focusing on making it as slim as possible?
Well, the Archie install, one of the things we've aimed at keeping with it is keeping it a pure Arch Linux install. Arch Linux is just a normal distro like any other.
Right.
And Archie is a live CD based on it. And the Archie install that runs off the CD is a pure Arch install. We've tried to keep it as unmodified as possible so that it retains all compatibility with ARC packages. So, you can go on pacman-s OpenOffice when you go and install it. That'll get you OpenOffice.
Okay.
So, are you guys becoming the official live CD of ARC Linux?
I guess we are becoming the official live CD. There used to be another one called AMLUG, but that didn't really go too far. I never got to try that one out either. But it will be the official live CD soon. So
what are you looking to do? Are you looking to get more people just to use the live CD, get some feedback from them?
We're just looking to just put it out there. People can see it, use it. Hopefully people will like it. Hopefully people will like it and install art from it. The HD install, so it'll be a good way to get people to Linux things. I mean, the install is not completely newbie friendly. Arch, one of the philosophies of Arch is that the user controls the system. There's no GUI wizards that do it for you unless you're telling them what to do. There's none that automate everything. You tell it what to do and it does it. So Arch's slim, it's lightweight, and you configure it however you want to configure it.
Now, what was one of the biggest hurdles, or the bigger hurdles, to making a live CD as compared to just making a regular distribution that you can install. I mean, what was the biggest hurdle you had to make that Archie?
Well, been a lot of hurdles, really, in making it. That's with any live CD. Partially because it's been written from scratch. And the main Archie developer who's in the IRC channel now, Zeke or Ziggy, if you want to ask him any questions. I think one of the things we've had trouble with is trying to keep it the pure Arkham store, try not to make small modifications that would probably make our life easier making a CD, but it would ruin the pure Arkham store on the CD, and we want to keep that pure Arkham store to make it, you know, make it easier for when they install it. It'll reduce any problems afterwards because of the hard drive and because of the fact that it was a live CD. Because with Nopix, you find, you know, Divine people don't want to give support to Nopix users because it's been modified so much that it's almost a different distro.
It is a different distro. Like, I installed Nopix way back when and to the hard drive, and, you know, basically what you wind up having is a Debian version that's a mixture of testing and unstable, and, you know, you try to go forward with what you have on the hard drive, and it's not that easy. You run into a lot of dependency issues. So I guess your guy's philosophy is to avoid all that.
Yeah, well, that's what we've tried to do. And I, again, testing the hard drive install, the first successful install, did it last night. And I've been able to install all the packages I wanted from ARC's repositories and the ARC mirrors and without any problems at all. So it's obviously working.
So do you think it will become the de facto installer as well as the live CD?
Pardon?
Do you think Archie will become the de facto Arch installer besides the live CD as well?
I don't think it will become the de facto installer because it boots into X and things. It's more room for error, you know. It may reduce the amount of hardware it can run on. I mean, regular Arch install is just similar to the new Divine installer. It just runs command line, you know, the dialogue-based interface, the command line. And that runs on anything. I mean, my server's running Arc, and I don't want to run X on that. But Archie has X, but the main Archie install city will stay for those who don't want X and XFCE on their system or whatever.
How is wireless support on the live version?
Currently, in 4.3, there's a good start on wireless support. We've got all the Intel drivers for all the Centrino-based laptops. We've got some drivers for quite a few other ones. We've got Prism, the AANMG drivers, and wireless is something I've been really taking a good look at for the next release. And when we release 5.6, which is the big major release, you know, where we're going to put it all over OS news and just publicize it to the whole world, I'm going to just try and have just support for just every wireless device I can find in there. I'm trying to get MDIS wrappers so people can, whose wireless devices aren't supported by like native drivers, they can install with the Windows drivers with MDIS wrapper and just have everything I can in there.
It's pretty tough because it's like you're trying to hit a moving target.
It is really, really difficult to get some of these because we've got to, you know, compile it all for the Archie kernel and everything. All the drivers are being updated all the time, so we've got to keep them up to date and everything. But yeah, we'll get it done somehow.
So, what limitations do you have, particularly with something like NDS Wrapper? Are you able to include the Windows driver in the live CD, or is that something that somebody would have to go out and download on their own because of the licensing of the software for that Windows driver?
Unfortunately, because of licensing, unless we spoke to the vendors, we probably wouldn't be able to include the Windows driver. So I'm just going to try and install NDS Wrapper so it's there, so that if they put the Windows driver on it, you know, USB drive or something, they can install it themselves.
And I guess that also comes into a problem. Do you have multimedia support, particularly video support or Flash support in a Firefox browser? Has that been a problem? Are you able to include that?
No, well, all of Arch, the Arch developers aren't quite like Divine and some other distros. They aren't as picky about having free and non-free, and I think we have got Flash in the current version. I don't think we're going to put Java on, because Java is absolutely huge. An installed Java package is 90 meg, so that's really too much for us on the live CD. But again, after you can, once you boot into the live CD, you can always install it from within the live CD as the live CD is running with Pac-Man. Other things like multimedia support, I think we were going to use XF Media, which is an XFCE-based media player, which uses Zion. I think we were going to include that on the next version.
Okay.
We might already have Zion on it now.
So then, are you allowed to include the Flash player? Does Macromedia allow you to do that? And distributions don't do it because it's not free software? Is that it?
I think a lot of distributions do it because it's not free software. The main developer was one who included it, so I think he checked up on the licensing. I think it's okay.
Okay.
So
I guess it would be difficult to have like a fully functional open office on there without Java installed. And it would be more bloated then, too.
Yeah, OpenOffice 2 is the one that's all dependent on Java. OpenOffice 1 will run fine without it. Red Hat have been working on OpenOffice 2 to try and make it work with the GNU Java compiler. And hopefully, I mean, if they get that working, then we'd be able to run OpenOffice 2 without Java. But we're not looking at putting OpenOffice on any time in the near future because, again, it's a big package, so it takes up a lot of space. That space we could use for other things like, you know, the extra drivers, other software like the multimedia software and things. And sometime in the future, we aim to have, at the moment, I think the ISO is about 350 meg, which leaves about another 350 meg free on the live CD. So in the future, we hope to have so that you can actually use that free space, which is what one of the other live CDs has done.
Now,
you can save your home config to that free space or whatever.
Arc Linux. Simplicity. What distribution were you using before you switched over to Arc? Were you using Crux?
I used Debian for probably about 6 months before I found Arc. And before that I was a Mandrake. Before that I was a Mandrake user. I've played with other distros.
Oh, Mandrake, go!
Link is actually alive. That's the first we've heard from him since we started talking to you.
Yeah, I'm warping over here.
Yeah, he's busy downloading Mandriva.
I still haven't got used to that new man. New man's shocking, I think. But
one thing I noticed about Arc Linux and Archie, is it pronounced Archie or Archie? The live CD.
Pronunciation is not something we've actually decided on. I pronounce it Archie.
Okay.
I pronounce Arc, so they kind of conflict a bit, but I think everyone just pronounces it how they like. So.
Okay, so what I first noticed is the main page for this, unless it's somewhere else, is on Wikipedia.
That's just a Wikipedia article I linked to. It's got a screenshot in it. That's the main page is at, I just jumped in the IRC. So it's user-contributions.org/archies.html. That's our main page. Still an outdated link to an older version of the live CD. If you feel like downloading it, there's a forum link that is put in the IRC there. You can grab it from the latest version we've got uploaded. We should have a new release in the next 2 weeks, so keep an eye out for that.
Okay. So then, is user contribution, that is a, is that the actual homes? What is usercontributions.org?
Usercontributions.org is something one of the other ARC users set up. It's a place where he's given hosting and forums for ARC projects who might need it. So he's given us forums and some hosting for Archie, which we're really grateful. Thanks for that, Rasset.
All right.
And he's giving it to a few other projects. They're like the ArcGIS live CD and things.
And this is all like a just like a grassroots community, isn't it?
Yep.
Just built from the ground up by it.
Yep.
Now, have you guys gotten any funding or anything? Any businesses looking into using Arc Linux? On that end?
No, Arc Linux itself was just created by Judd Bennett. I think it's probably about 2-3 years ago, and it was mainly just to create a distro for himself that fulfilled his needs. And he found over time that other people liked this distro too and decided to use it. So Arc's been growing over the last few years, and we've been seeing a lot of users coming from Gentoo, because I said Arc's compiled for 6.6 processors, which is Pentium 2 and up. So a lot of users have come from Gentoo and have liked the simpler Arc system, which, you know, with the pre-compiled binaries, you don't have to wait for everything to file, which is nice. And Archie is just something that the main Archie developer, Z4Ziv, it was just something he decided to do. He's been doing this free time just for a bit of, you know, for something to do, and I decided to help, and I've been doing some of the kernel work, some of the driver work, and the hard drive installer for it.
So when are we going to see a port of Arc or Archie over to PowerPC?
It's in progress. It's going slowly. I don't know whether it's going to take off hugely, but it is going slowly.
And then you're going to work on the live CD version for that?
I haven't even got a PowerPC-based computer, so there's nothing really I can do for a PowerPC-based version. I mean, theoretically, it wouldn't be hard. I mean, the Archie, not only does it release a live CD, it releases the scripts that you can use to make a live CD, and any PowerPC user, if they wanted to, they could use those scripts and build a live CD themselves, well, you know, based on Arc. But you can use this Archie script just to turn any normal Arc install to a live CD if you wanted, so...
Now, those scripts you're talking about, are they available off the Archie website?
They're available through a repository for Pac-Man. Pac-Man, you've probably heard me mention it a few times, it's the package manager for Arc.
And right.
There's a repository for that, which you can grab it from.
Cool. That's great. Now, your Archie... Are you going in a specific direction? I mean, you say it seems like it's going to be a general desktop use. I mean, are you going to, like, there's some live CDs that go for penetration testing, some that go for multimedia like Dynabolic. Do you have a specific direction that you're going towards, or are you just going to do, like, a general Linux desktop?
I think we're just going to keep it a general Linux desktop that'll, just, you know, work for those who want to use it. I mean, I'm making sure it's got all the recovery tools you'd want on it, so you could, you know, fix up the broken Linux system on it. But
broken Windows box.
Programs. Pardon?
A broken Windows box.
Yeah. Well, we could look at putting Clam AV, so you can, you know, virus scan those Windows boxes, or we'll see what, you know, you can fix a Windows box with it too. So maybe even consider captive NTFS to give you NTFS write support. That's maybe further down the path.
And then it gets all big and bloated, and you have a Nopix version of Arch.
You're gonna come out with a live DVD ISO.
I'm a live DVD.
Yeah.
There's not one planned in the near future, but I mean, I suppose that anyone, if they wanted to, could easily produce one. Any person with an Arch install could easily produce a live DVD with the scripts if they wanted to. The scripts are pretty versatile. I mean, it's just make an Arch Linux installation on one partition on your computer, and then you can use the live scripts to build an ISO out of that. So if you wanted to install, you know, your 5 gig of software onto that partition and build an ISO out of that, you can do that quite easily with the scripts.
That's exactly what I want to do, and that's why I use Mandrake.
Yeah,
Never mind. The joke was wasted on you. You guys aren't even paying attention. I wasted a whole good joke on you. Just forget it.
You're awake?
I'm going to Garno.
I'll just cut him off.
Yeah, let's cut him off.
Him anymore.
No more drinks for you.
Well, James, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about Archie. It looks fantastic. It's something I definitely want to download and try out.
Cool.
I'll be doing that this week at work, where I actually have computer systems I can take down.
You can use stuff, huh?
Yeah, yep. I can use stuff instead of here. But I will definitely, you know, I'm going to check that out and give it a whirl. Because, you know, I like Nopix. I use the Nopix, but sometimes, you know, it takes, with some of our older systems, takes a long time to boot Nopix up on. And damn small Linux is works pretty well. I'm interested to see how well Archie flies on those older machines. Or less powerful.
Well, Dan's going to wait for the female version of Archie, which they aptly named Veronica. Right?
I was waiting for that.
Yep.
Why not Betty?
Why not Betty?
Well, now we should have the next major version of Archie out probably next week or maybe the week after. That'll be 0.5, and that will include the new GUI hard drive installer on it. So that'll be something to watch out for. But in the meantime, I'll put the link to the forum thread where someone's put a 0.4.3 ISO, which is the latest release. It doesn't have the hard drive installed on it yet, but it's got a, you know, it's got a good working Archie desktop with a, with, you know, it's probably got about half the wireless drivers I want to include on it, but it's going somewhere. It's got NVIDIA drivers on it. I managed to get them working with a bit of brute force, but yeah, that's ready to go. If you want to give that a shot,
we'll give it a whirl.
Now, why? What about? Like, I'm looking at the Arc Linux releases. Why not name the releases off of Archie Comics characters?
That would be cool.
Like Judhead and Archie and Veronica and Betsy. And who else is in there? I mean, that would be cool.
What's the dog's name?
I don't know what his dog's name.
I've never read those comics.
Those are old comics, man. They go back way back, those comic books.
You can still get them in a supermarket. Something to think about.
Yeah.
Well, James, thank you very much for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll touch base with you a little bit later, you know, a couple weeks down the line, see how that's coming along. Get you back on, talk about our opinion of Archie Linux after had a time to try it out.
Okay, then.
You have a good week.
Have a good day.
You too.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me on here. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And everything's cool now. If we can only get rid of this other guy on here.
What the? Who is that?
Bite me.
Just shut up.
I say you have to do your mix over there.
My what?
Your mix.
Which mix?
The one you were just doing off of Pat's album.
Yes. We have a song for tonight. From one of Pat's
co-workers.
Boyfriend.
No, I don't have a boyfriend. I'm completely hetero and I'm married to a woman. The group name is Davia, and the song is called Transdential, and it's kind of like a techno electronica type sounding song.
So get your glow sticks out.
Yeah, but do we want to talk for a few minutes? How about we save the song for the outro?
Well, you want the song on the outro now.
Yeah, what do you think? Let's talk for a few minutes before we go.
Alan wants the song now. Pat wants the song on the outro.
Minutes to go.
Let's talk for a few minutes and we'll play the song at the end.
Link doesn't want a thing. Except to be able to poop in peace.
So the European Parliament shot down software patents. Whereas our British friends like to say patents.
Congratulations to them.
Patents.
Man, I've been so far out.
Yeah, no kidding. I wish they'd migrate that kind of crap over here to the U.S.
Well, we're getting extra patents.
Patents.
Yes, extra patents. They're going to increase the patent approval by 50%.
Yeah. I'm going to patent the phrase, "You're a dick."
And you're gonna
Donald Trump.
Put on your chin.
Yeah.
Donald Trump did You're Fired, so. I think he trademarked it.
Well, there's a difference.
Now you've said it now.
Trademark.
Yeah. So now I have to pay Donald Trump the $5.50. It's getting really ridiculous, the whole patent issue. You know, it's like, where do you draw the line? I mean, one thing is to have a patent for something that's actual, real, and implemented. It seems that lately a lot of these software companies are trying to patent ideas and concepts. I mean, how the hell do you do that? I guess you send your money into the U.S. Patent Office.
Well, that's what lawyers are for.
I mean, where does it end, you know?
You know what?
It doesn't
it's
end.
The guy with the most money wins. That's the way it works.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Well, from what I hear, what they try and do is they try and patent this stuff. And the lawyers, you know, the U.S. Patent Office has, you know, is overworked, doesn't have the resources to follow up on every single one of these. So I guess, you know, from my understanding, is they push it through, and what they end up doing with these patents is they use them as a threat to other businesses, open source, anything, that it costs a lot more to, I guess, once a patent has been approved, to have that patent revoked takes a lot of money. So if they come at you with patent infringement, you have to spend an awful lot of money to combat this in the court system.
You need more freaking lawyers.
Right. So, you know, it's not something that you can say, well, this is, you know, prior art or this or that. You actually have to end up, I guess, going to court and going through this whole process.
Improving
process. Yeah, it's one giant freaking circle jerk is what it
right.
is.
Right. Even though the burden of proof is upon them to show that you violated their patent, then it starts this whole thing where now you have to, if they can show that you violated the patent, now you have to prove that there was prior art or something like that to combat them. So it's, you know, it's a big, it's not just a, you know, something where they can say, yeah, we actually have
it's like Amazon patented one-click shopping.
Right.
I mean, what the frick is that?
Until somebody actually threatens somebody with it and takes them to court, and they go through the court battle, whether that patent will actually uphold, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I think groups like the EFF will find certain patents ridiculous, and they might actually take it to court to show that there's been prior art, that this patent should never have been approved.
Issued in the first
But
first
again,
place.
That takes an incredible
sure,
amount
resources.
Of money.
Sure, resources. More lawyers.
Right.
Research lawyers, the whole bit.
So my opinion of this, all right, what I get from this is it seems to be easier and cheaper in the long run to apply for a patent and get one than it is to just, you know, to revoke a patent that's already been approved. So a company like Microsoft can try and patent 10,000 things and maybe 100 stick. So now they can take those 100 patents and use them as their muscle and throw them at people. And, you know, if they don't have the money or resources to back it up, they got problems.
If you don't have a better product, you sue and send the lawyers in.
That's it.
Well, you also use it when it's time to sell your company.
Yeah, make some money.
You have tons of patents. That's, you know, that's what you can use to sell your company. And the more of those you have, the more money you can get.
Now, you know what? Before we go too far on patents, I just got to read this to you because my wife sent me this article via email. It's in. It's from the Associated Press on Yahoo News right now.
Your wife sent you an email? She's downstairs.
Yeah.
Man, I'm opening the door and hitting you in the head.
Man charged with stealing Wi-Fi signal. In St. Petersburg, Florida, police have arrested a man for using someone else's wireless internet.
They're trying to get him on a felony charge.
Yeah, network.
That's
one
a
of
bit
the
harsh,
first
man.
Criminal cases involving a fairly common practice. This fellow, 41.
War driving?
He said, using Wi-Fi signal from the home of Richard Dino, from this guy's home, who had noticed Smith sitting in an SUV outside his house using a laptop computer.
The hilarious thing is the guy caught him once, then went away, and the guy was still there when he came back.
You could always take a baseball bat to the guy's head. That works pretty well.
Okay, innocuous use of other people's unsecured Wi-Fi networks is common, though experts say that plenty of illegal use goes on undetected, such as people sneaking on others' networks to traffic in child pornography, steal credit card information, and send death threats. It is not
invoke
clear.
The fear factor.
Okay, but they say it's not clear why Smith was using this person's network. Prosecutors declined to comment, and a working phone number cannot be located for the guy who was using it. So, you know, we don't know anything else that was going on other than apparently this article makes it sound like this guy was using an unsecure wireless access. Guy saw him in his SUV. I must have gone out and told him to go away, but the guy was still there. Or maybe he never said anything to the guy, and now he's up on charges.
Dumbass.
Seriously, how the fuck do you get caught for that?
You sit out in front of the guy's house.
Too long.
You sit out in front of the shoe store.
And you wave to him when he leaves, too. Like, you're sitting there with your laptop, you're waving, you point, you go, look, yeah.
Well, that was on CNN earlier. And I guess the guy came out there to see what he was doing, and he pulled the laptop screen down. And I guess the homeowner went out, and when he came back, the guy was still there.
Yeah, that would piss
me off. And he
went
up to the guy again, and he closed the laptop screen on him and didn't move. So the guy went in and called the cops on him. So whatever this guy was doing, he was really being an idiot about it.
He should have just drove away.
What I don't understand is, like, what? First of all, what the hell is the big deal? And second of all, if you don't want someone on your frickin' wireless network, secure the damn thing.
Pull the plug. Shut it off.
I agree with you there. I'm not defending the guy. Just from what it sounded like in the write up, the guy was being a bit of an asshole about it.
About using it, or?
Well, I guess, if you're sitting out in front of somebody's house and the homeowner comes out and is like, what the hell are you doing? Don't you think you'd have enough brains to, like, go around the block and find somebody else's?
Now, see, it brings up an interesting point. Now, again, we're not lawyers here, so I don't know.
Thank God.
Something that, yeah, actually look into, and we have to leave in a minute, but if you are outside, not on somebody's property, but their signal extends beyond their property. What is the legal? I mean, what is
good
the
question.
Legality of that? If their
and that's what they're going to argue on it. So it's hard
to see where that goes.
Something to keep an eye on.
Because and again, even a business too, because you're not actually going on the business property, plugging your network, your laptop into their network. Their signal is extending beyond their boundaries, so they're actually opening the door, beyond their property bounds. Beyond the boundary. And again, and the next question is, how far up in the air does that go? Is it illegal for you to take something that somebody
is... That's what's going to be argued. Most likely, this is going to get tossed.
I've accidentally, got into somebody's network inside my house.
Well, if you got a Windows box, it'll just find the strongest network and connect to it, doesn't it?
Right.
Most of them, if you leave it, unless you configure it to look for just a specific network like we do here... On it, which is basically find the strongest
latch
one
on.
And latch on.
Yeah.
But that brings up another interesting point. Is now with the wireless access points being commodity items now. If I have a neighbor on one side, my Catholic double has a neighbor next door to me, decides to put up a wireless access point. So now I have two wireless access points on either side of me. I got the PPNL behind.
Sweet.
Me. Somebody in front.
You got choice.
I got five or six different access points all coming into my house.
Yeah.
What do you do? Now, the next thing is, what happens with my channel, with my access points on the same channel as theirs? So we got problems.
When networks collide.
And with that?
With that, I guess we're going to cut out of here.
Yeah, we got 10 o'clock here, so.
Let me play that.
This tune is called Davin, and the song is Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Hopefully we get our Asterisk server working by next week.
Oh, why did I do this? I had it all ready to go, and now I lost it.
Click, click, click.
As we get cut off on BinRev.
Yeah. So, any last words, Link?
Nope. Keep checking the website for the new stuff. If I ever get it done, I'll put it up. It'll be new and exciting. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. You enjoy the rest of your week, and hopefully your butt will feel better, Link.
Yeehaw.
It's nice talk-over music, Jeff.
It is. It's like theme music. Get the glow sticks out. Let's boogie.
Good night.
If anybody's interested, they'd like to know what other files that he would like to include on Dark Machine Linux applications. He talked about Truth Bashbot. If anybody has any ideas, hey, check out that website he posted on the chat. We'll probably have it up in our show notes. Enjoy Transcendental.
7, Transcendent.
Thank you for listening.
Just died all of a sudden.